Welcome to the Life Self-Mastery Podcast, where we bring in entrepreneurs who have created online businesses and improved their lifestyles. Here's your host, Rohit Malhotra.
Hi everyone, I'm Rohit from LifeSelfMastery.com, and today we have James Clear, who's the author of the upcoming book, Atomic Habits, an easy and proven way to build good habits and break bad ones, which is launching on October 16th. The book draws on proven behavior change ideas from biology, psychology, and neuroscience, and explains them in a way that is easy to understand and apply. He's also the creator of Habits Academy, an online course for people who want to build better habits. He's also a weightlifter and a travel photographer in over 30 countries. James' work has been covered at dozens of major media outlets, including the New York Times, Entrepreneur, Time, and on CBS This Morning. Welcome to the show, James.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So, you know, I've been following your website for a long time, and, you know, I want to know, and for the listeners, you know, also, how did you become a writer, and how did you, you know, decide to write about habits?
Yeah, that's a good question. So early on, and I think this is true for most people who are creators of some sort, certainly for most writers, I had this kind of imposter complex, this feeling of like, who am I to write about these topics? Why should I pick up, you know, this and start publishing my ideas publicly? Like, will anybody care about this? And I had a friend tell me, you know, you don't feel like an expert now, but the way to become an expert is by writing about it every week. And I sort of internalized that idea. And so November 12th, 2012, I published my first article on jamesclear.com, and I decided I was going to publish a new article every Monday and Thursday. And so I did that for the first 3 years, and that was really how I developed an expertise, I guess, around habits. I don't really view myself as an expert. I think my readers and I were peers. We are both, or we all are working through it. And my job is just to kind of share the lessons that I come across as I'm writing and as we're going through that process. So, I kind of approach it as an experimenter. Now, how I chose to write about habits is mostly because in many ways, most of the articles I write are just an article written to myself. Like, it's a reminder of what I should be doing or what I should stay on top of. And so I just wrote about what interested me and what I was working on during the day and what I was focused on getting better at. And so, it was just a natural topic, mostly because it had something to do with my personal life.
Interesting. One of the most famous articles that you've written is about how to get one person better and one person fooled, where you say the majority of the rewards in a given field is given to a certain people, teams, and organizations that maintain one person advantage over the alternatives. So what do you mean by that one person fooled?
Well, so many people are familiar with the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule, which essentially says that, you know, 80% of the outcome or 80% of the influence is a result of 20% of the work or 20% of the people or 20% of the options. So, for example, some common ones, and these are, I don't know necessarily that these are proven by research studies or anything, but the basic concept is, like, 20% of the carpet in your house gets 80% of the foot traffic, or 20% of the roads in a city see 80% of the cars. There are some that are measured. So, for example, somewhere around 8 or 9% of the population in the world holds like 90% of the wealth. So the point here is that there's this like power distribution. Things are not evenly distributed or evenly used. And so the question that I had is, well, why does that occur? What is the function or the process through which that occurs? And this is an example that I share in the article, but imagine that you have two plants that are growing next to each other in the forest. And one plant is able to grow just slightly more than the other, just let's say 1% more. It's able to catch 1% more sunlight or capture 1% more rain. And through this advantage that it gets that day, it's able to grow a little bit more the next day. And again, it can, you know, increase its ability a little bit. And over time, the one plant crowds out the other. And as it crowds out the other, it spreads more seeds, has a higher likelihood of reproducing and spreading other plants to the area around it. And pretty soon, if you repeat that through enough cycles, you end up with one plant that accounts for, you know, half of the rainforest, for example. And in fact, scientists have found that when they analyze the Amazon rainforest, that somewhere around 1 or 2% of the trees account for over half of the forest in the Amazon. So there are like 16,000 different trees in the Amazon, but a very small subset makes up the bulk of the forest. So I think that this general idea applies to many different areas of life. It could apply to business, could apply to sports, and so on. If you can win just a little bit, you don't need to. The difference between first place and second place could be a hundredth of a second in a race, but all of the gold medal goes to the first place winner. And so this is something that's called a winner-take-all effect. And I think the way to think about this is that throughout our daily life, there are all sorts of little, tiny competitions that have winner-take-all effects. So, for example, a customer walks into a store and they're looking at two books. And they might look at the books for about the same amount of time, so they give them about 50% of their attention each, but then they just decide to buy one. And so all of the revenue from that transaction goes to one book. So that little winner-take-all battle was happening right there. And what you find is that for the options that are just 1% better, 1% more effective, 1% more friction, more frictionless, 1% more convenient or easier to use, that they win these tiny battles. And then by winning the tiny battles, they are now in a better position to win the next battle. And so this is how you end up with this kind of distribution of power. Now, I was not saying that it was a good or a bad thing that this occurred. I was just trying to understand the process behind why it occurs.
Got it. We've been taught to set goals and create goals, but you also mentioned that, you know, sometimes systems are better than goals. So is it right to say that, you know, once you build systems and not follow goals?
Well, so I covered this in the book, Atomic Habits. It's covered in the first chapter. And it is this difference between systems and goals. And one of the core philosophies of the book is that we do not rise to the level of our goals. We fall to the level of our systems. And what I mean by that is it is actually not that difficult to come up with a big goal. Generating a goal is something that people do all the time. And in fact, you'll often see that the winners and losers in a particular competition have the same goals. You know, every candidate that applies for a job wants to get the job. They all have the goal of getting the job. But it's the candidates who have a better system, whether it's the system of education that they followed preceding the interview, or their system of preparing for the interview, what type of questions they go through, how they do practice interviews, their system of researching the company so that they're well prepared for understanding what the company's working on and what's important to them. And it's actually that system that leads to the result that you do or don't want. And in fact, many of the results that we get in daily life right now, whatever your current position is in your daily life, is the perfect result for the system that you have. Your current system, by definition, is perfectly designed to produce your current results, which is why you have those results. So my point is not that goals are not useful. They are, in fact, useful for setting direction, for deciding what's important to you, for figuring out where to direct your energy. But once that initial choice has been made, what determines whether or not you achieve a goal is not having a goal. It's the system or the process that you follow for making progress over the long run. And so I would define it as decision-making and habits. So decision-making, which we could say is a goal, you decide to select a certain goal. That sets your direction, determines the amount of leverage or opportunity that you have. But your habits, which we could say is the system of behaviors that you follow each day, your habits determine how far you walk along that path, how likely you are to take advantage of the opportunity provided to you by the decision that you made initially. So I think it really comes down to good decision-making and good habit formation. And yeah, that core idea that we do not rise to the level of our goals, but fall to the level of our systems, I think is the main point that I'm trying to make, that the system determines the progress.
Got it. And is it true that, you know, it takes 21 days to build a habit? Or what has been your, you know, thoughts behind that?
Well, you see numbers like this thrown out a lot. So people will say things like it takes 21 days or 30 days or 100 days. And the real answer, the honest answer is, how long does it take to build a habit? Well, it takes forever, because when you stop doing a habit, it's no longer a habit. If you cease the behavior after on day 29 or on day 31 or whatever, then you don't have a habit anymore. So, I think that we need a shift from looking at a habit as a finish line to cross, as something that, oh, I'll just do this for 30 days and then I'll be done, to a lifestyle to be lived, a practice to be committed to. This is why building small and sustainable changes, which is something I talk about in Atomic Habits, I think is so critical, because if you want to adapt your lifestyle, it needs to be a moderate change or a tiny shift. And so for that reason, I think habits should be viewed much more as a lifestyle than a finish line. Now, we could ask the question, how long does it take for a habit to be established, or how long does it take for it to become automatic? And that research has looked into, and it depends on the habit, but usually it's a couple months, 2 or 3 months of practice before you can do it with fluency and more or less on autopilot. However, you still need to make sure that you're doing it each day, because then again, it's not a habit once you stop doing it.
Got it. And, you know, can people add on to habits which they don't enjoy doing? Like, I do, you know, have the habit of going to the gym, but it's very difficult for me to wake up early, you know, around 6 or 7 o'clock. So is it possible for me to add on to habit by being rewarded for this particular habit?
That's a really good question. So in the book, I lay out one something that I call the cardinal rule of behavior change. And the cardinal rule of behavior change is, behaviors that are immediately rewarded get repeated. Behaviors that are immediately punished get avoided. And the immediacy of whether you feel satisfied or feel successful or enjoy a particular behavior has a lot to do with whether or not you want to repeat it in the future. You know, every behavior produces multiple outcomes across time. So for example, if you eat a donut today, right now, it is tasty, the outcome is favorable, it's positive, it's enjoyable. The ultimate outcome, 2 weeks or a month from now, or two months from now, is that if you keep repeating this habit, you gain weight. And so the immediate outcome is favorable, the ultimate outcome is unfavorable. With good habits, it's the reverse. Going to the gym or waking up early, to use the examples that you just gave, are a little bit painful right now. They're not enjoyable. The immediate outcome is unfavorable. There's a little bit of a consequence, or at least some friction there. The ultimate outcome is very favorable. 2 weeks or 2 months from now or so on, you're in shape, or you're more productive, or you're waking up early, or so on. And so much of the battle of building good habits and breaking bad ones is about finding a way to pull the immediate consequence, or the long-term consequences of your bad habits into the present moment so that you feel them right away, and the long-term benefits of your good habits into the present moment so that you enjoy them right away. And the human brain is wired to prefer immediate outcomes. There's a good evolutionary argument for this, which is that for millennia, we lived in the savanna and in fields in the wild, and we were in a heavily immediate return-oriented environment. That's a phrase that researchers will use, an immediate return environment. And what that means is that most of the choices we made were oriented toward the present moment. So what to eat for your next meal, whether to take shelter from a storm, whether to avoid a predator that you can see across the plains. And those choices provided an immediate benefit to your life. And if you were the type of person who did not consider those immediate benefits, and you were up in your head and you were thinking more about long-term future choices, If you thought too much about those, then you wouldn't take care of your immediate needs and you would die off and not continue to spread your genes throughout the population. And so anyway, we ended up finding some balance in between there. But modern society has shifted radically from the immediate return environment that we evolved in. In modern society, many of the things that we work on have delayed rewards. So for example, you go to work today, but you don't get a paycheck for a few weeks. Or you go to school today, but you don't graduate for 4 years. You save for retirement now, but you don't actually see the benefits of that for decades to come. Right. And so many of the actions that we take have these delayed outcomes. And this is because our brain is wired to prefer immediate ones. This is the ultimate answer to your question here, which is that in order to get the long-term outcomes that we now want in modern society, it helps to make the immediate action as beneficial or enjoyable as possible. So actions like habit tracking, where you like put an X on a calendar after each time you do it, that's just a little bit of satisfaction in the moment. Hey, I just did this. It was a good thing. Now I get to enjoy that just slightly. It's a little bit of satisfaction in the moment that gets you to enjoy doing the thing that benefits you in the long run. And so so I think our task in many ways is to find strategies that allow us to reinforce our long-term habits by making it enjoyable to do something in the moment that benefits you over time.
Got it. Are there any keystone habits which people can adopt, which can, you know, help them move up in their lives?
Are there any keys to building habits or key habits in particular to focus on?
Yeah, some key habits which you think people adopted, they can move from one level to, you know, to many levels above.
Yeah, so there are some crucial habits or some pillar habits. Sometimes they're referred to as keystone habits. So there are two ways to answer this question. The first way is, what habits do people who rise in life seem to have that seem fairly universal across them? And of course, this is going to depend on your interests and what you're trying to achieve. But we could say that being a learning machine is definitely a huge thing. So reading each day or consuming information somehow, getting to the end of each day and being 1% smarter is not going to make a huge difference on any given day, but it counts for a lot over the long run. Knowledge, Warren Buffett has that famous quote where he says, knowledge builds up like compound interest. It, you know, just accumulates over and over and over again. So finding a way to get a little bit smarter each day, that's a huge one. Exercise is another crucial one. We all humans have bodies, and your body has to be in good shape for you to take advantage of the energy and the time and the opportunity afforded to you. So exercise is a crucial habit. And then all humans require energy. So if you have time, if you have an hour available, that means you have opportunity. But if you don't have the energy to take advantage of that hour, then you're not going to do anything with it. And we get energy by what we eat. So good nutrition and health habits in that way are crucial as well to make sure that you have the energy to take advantage of things. So I think if you could just get those three-ish areas dialed in, learning, health and fitness, nutrition, and I guess I put sleep in there as well, then you have a good baseline for taking advantage of the opportunities life provides. So that's the first way to answer the question. The second way to answer the question is a little more specific to you as an individual, which is, what do I do on days when things go well for me? What is something that seems to pull the rest of my life in line? And some of the habits that I just mentioned could be an answer to that. So for example, these are sometimes called keystone habits because they kind of act as the keystone in the rest of your life. So for me, working out is my keystone habit. I know that if I go to the gym, I get the benefits of exercise, but I also have this like post-workout high where I feel very focused. I sleep better at night because I'm tired from working out. And because I sleep better, that means I wake up the next day with better energy and I'm more well-rested. I tend to eat better when I'm working out because I feel like I don't want to waste it. And at no point was I trying to build better sleep habits or energy habits or nutrition habits, but they all kind of came as this like ripple effect from doing this one thing of working out. Some other common keystone habits are going for a daily walk. It's very common amongst a lot of creators and writers. Meditating. You hear this a lot from CEOs and other professionals that if they get their 10 minutes of meditation in, then they feel like the rest of their day kind of runs more smoothly. Visualization is common for people who are performers. So you'll often hear comedians say that they'll like do go through the same visualization routine before they get out on stage, or athletes will visualize the same type of thing before they step out onto the field. So the way to answer this question for yourself is ask yourself that question. What do I do on days when my life seems to, you know, fall in line, when things seem to be going well for me? And you'll probably come up with two or three answers, and then you can test them out and just try to do one very consistently for a month and see how that goes. And then you try another one. And pretty soon you'll dial in on what the keystone habit is for you.
Okay. And you know, you do annual review every year where you mention about your how many times you have lifted weights and how many countries you've been to. You meticulously measure everything. So do you think, you know, people should measure their habits so that, you know, there's a long-term effect to it? Or, you know, is it just for the, you know, first 2 or 3 months and then, you know, I mean, my question is, does it really help to measure each and every habit?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the short answer is no, you don't have to measure each and every habit. I'd write about this more in chapter 16 of Atomic Habits. But the core idea here is that for many habits, good enough is good enough. So for example, once you build the habit of brushing your teeth, you probably don't need to be tracking that all the time. Or once you build the habit of tying your shoes, you don't need to be measuring how well you tie your shoes. For many habits in life, just getting the habit established is good. But there are going to be a few key areas of life that are really important to you, that you feel like you want to advance in or you want to perform well in. And for those areas, it could be worth measuring. Now, the challenge of measurement is that it asks you to build two habits. You need to build the habit that you're trying to do, like going to the gym, for example, and then also the habit of measuring it. So writing down your each set in the workout. That's fine. It's not that big of a deal. But you don't want to be doing that for every habit that you're trying to build throughout life. So I think it's best to restrict your measurement to, say 2 or 3 areas, that are important to you. You mentioned some of the ones that I track each year. So I track how many articles I write, how many workouts I do, how many new places I travel to. And it's also worth saying that there are many ways to measure automatically. So I don't actually keep track of how many articles I write. I just have my site, and when I get to the end of the year, I go back and count them up. And so it only, you know, only takes 10 minutes and you're done. For the workout, I do actually manually record that. For travel, your calendar, my calendar, is an automatic measurement of where I go and what I do. So when I get to the end of the year, I just go back and count through how many places I've been. So whenever possible, automating the measurement is a very effective strategy. Now, I will say one more thing, which is that a measurement, this is called Goodhart's Law, which is a measure ceases to be a good measure when it becomes the target. And the point behind Goodhart's Law is if you make it all about the thing you're measuring, then you lose sight of what actually mattered in the first place. So this is what you see happen when people get obsessed with what the number is on the scale, and they care more about the scale going down than they do about being healthy. And so don't let the measurement override everything or override the fundamental reason behind building the habit in the first place. But if you're able to keep that within a reasonable boundary, then measurement can be very useful.
Okay. You've written hundreds of great articles like Warren Buffett's Two-List Strategy, Sinfield Strategy, Setting Up a Bound, which has inspired me and many others, you know. But my question is, your articles are well-researched. How much time does it take for you to research and write on these articles?
Yeah, the typical article is at least 8 to 10 hours. Usually, it's somewhere between 10 to 20 hours of total work. And there are a few articles that were much longer and took 30 or 40 plus hours of work. So it's writing two articles a week, as I did for the first 2 years, that was a full-time job. It was two 20-hour articles. So that would be, that would take up everything. And then you got the rest of the business on top of it and answering emails and so on. So, it's at least 10 hours, I would say, as a lower bound, and probably closer to 20 most of the time.
Okay. And, I want to talk about, what made you write Atomic Habits? You've been planning to write it. So can you talk more about what made you write it?
Well, I signed the book deal with Penguin Random House in 2015. So it's been about 3 years from the time we started the book to the time that it's being published. And when I had reached that point, I had about 30 or 40 ideas that were all sort of under the umbrella of building better habits. So I had many ideas that were related to that topic, but what I didn't have was a cohesive understanding of how it all fit together. I didn't have a framework. I didn't have a universal approach or even an understanding of how these different ideas wove together or worked with one another. And that's an important thing. If you want to understand how something works, if you want to understand the system of human behavior, it's a very complex thing. So it was kind of an ambitious thing to try to attempt to do with the book. But I was interested in seeing how all those ideas kind of fit together. And in fact, I spent at least the first year working on the book, just trying to figure out how to get them in the right order. How do these things build on one another? And it took me a while, but I feel pretty good with the framework that I have now. And really, it's an ongoing conversation. I'm interested and open to updating the framework and updating the approach to how I discuss building better habits. So that was one reason, was to increase the depth of my knowledge and the depth of how I thought about the ideas. And a book seemed like the best format for that. The second reason is just to continue to spread the message and share it with more people. My hope is that the work that I do matters and makes a difference. And writing articles on jamesclear.com is one way to distribute that to people. But a book is another great way to share the ideas with folks and hopefully make a positive difference for a few people. And so I was interested in exploring that platform and getting the word out to see what people think of it.
Awesome. So what is the next big opportunity for James Clear as a brand, and as a writer?
Well, I'm enjoying the opportunity that I have right now. I'm really excited to talk about Atomic Habits and share it with everyone. And so I'll be focusing on that for the short term. I do have an interest in writing about other ideas. So I'll be writing more about decision-making and mental models. I'll be writing more about consciousness and how we think. And I'm excited to explore those topics too. But for the next few months, I'm still going to be focused pretty heavily on habits.
Okay. So let's quickly do the top three. What's your favorite business book?
Yeah, there's so many great business books out there. The one that comes to mind right now is Influence by Robert Cialdini. It's a great summary of human psychology and some basic business principles that can be applied to pretty much any company. Another one that I really like is called Breakthrough Advertising. It's a book about writing. It's a book about writing ads, but it applies to all kinds of writing. It applies to pretty much anyone who is trying to write better titles or a more compelling description of their products or better emails to reach out to people. It's a really good book about how to write more effectively, specifically for business. So I think those two are really solid.
Okay. And if you could go back in time when you started, James Clear brand, what is one thing you would have focused on?
One thing I would have focused on that I didn't do at the time?
Would you have done something differently?
Well, it's a good question. I still think that focusing on the fundamentals is an underappreciated advantage. So one of the reasons that jamesclear.com grew so quickly is because I wrote the two best articles I could every week for 3 years. And there's nothing novel about that strategy. There's nothing really like shocking about doing that. It's just that almost nobody actually does it for 3 years. And so that made a big difference. And I would say focusing on the fundamentals like that, just making sure I show up and spending less time on looking for like a marketing gimmick or a marketing strategy. I spent a lot of time trying to find like a better, I don't know. Early on, I had this thought that, oh, if I get featured in the New York Times, then I'll be set. Or if I can just figure out the perfect like webinar strategy, then I'll be set. But I think all of that stuff just clouded my vision and prevented me from spending more time on the ideas and on writing great articles, which is actually what made the difference. So I think I did an okay job of that, and I've gotten better over the years. And I, you know, now I spend an incredible amount of time on each article and on the book. But early on, I probably had a lot of wasted time.
Okay. And what's your favorite online tool, for example, Gmail or Slack?
Well, I guess my favorite tool has to be Drip, because I use that for email. I guess I could really just say any email provider, because that's how I distribute my articles to the audience. And the email newsletter is like, you know, that's where I spend a lot of my time and focus. However, I also really like Evernote. Evernote is where I do all my writing. It's where I collect all of my ideas for future articles. And I found it really useful. So yeah, it's definitely been great.
Okay, and how can listeners buy your book, Atomic Habits?
Oh, well, thank you. If this conversation has been interesting and you're interested in learning more about how habits work and how to build good habits and break bad ones, then Atomic Habits, I think, is going to be an interesting read for you. So one of the core themes of the book I mentioned is that we do not rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. But another core theme is that if you can just get 1% better each day, if you can just build a small habit, and have that compound day in and day out, you can end up with some really remarkable results in the long run. And the purpose of the book is to discuss how to do that, how to build a system for getting 1% better. And you can find much more about the book and reviews on it and additional information at atomichabits.com.
Okay, and what are the best way people can reach out to you?
JamesClear.com is the best place to go. I've got all my social profiles on there. And if you feel like following me on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, you're welcome to. You can also just poke around the site a little bit and see what type of articles interest you. But yeah, JamesClear.com.
All right, James, thanks a lot for coming onto the show. I'm sure listeners would have learned a lot. I really appreciate talking to you.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it too.
Thanks for listening to the Life Self Mastery podcast, where we teach you how to start and grow your online business. For more information, visit Rohit's blog at www.lifeselfmastery.com.